This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suhibi in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And we're standing ready to support the government to receive the refugees in line with their international obligations.
That's Boris Cheserekov, spokesman for the UN Refugee Agency, on Tanzania's forcible deportation of asylum seekers fleeing violence in Mozambique's volatile Cabo Delgado province. Details coming up also. Uganda has begun coronavirus vaccinations in its refugee camps and settlements. And Germany is working with Italy to organize an international conference on Libya. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Tens of thousands of people over age 60 are being vaccinated in South Africa for COVID-19 after initial hitches in the country's immunization program. But scientists say the rollout has arrived much too late to prevent a potentially devastating third wave of coronavirus in the African nation, hardest hit by the pandemic. Darren Taylor reports.
Medical experts want the government to reintroduce tougher restrictions in a desperate bid to avoid mounting infection rates and deaths.
We should be banning mass gatherings right now.
Professor Mark Mendelson is an infectious diseases specialist at the University of Cape Town.
Bringing down this allowance of 500 outdoors, 250 indoors, really to limit all mass gatherings, whether it be churches, casinos, or any indoor areas, and stricter measures on indoor gatherings in particular, because these are the super spreader event areas, and these are the ones that you really need to be very careful about.
He says South Africans need to ensure they spend as little time as possible indoors in places where there are a lot of people, such as shopping malls.
The same public health interventions that everyone is probably bored sick of, but this is what needs to be done. The social distancing, the hand hygiene, etc. This is what will limit the size of the third wave, and indeed waves to come. Because unless we get our act together and really accelerate vaccination, we're looking at third, fourth, fifth, and maybe sixth waves.
Most provinces in South Africa are reporting steadily increasing infections and fatalities, but nowhere close to the rates in India. The rapid spread of COVID-19 there has forced its Serum Institute, the world's largest vaccine manufacturer, to stop exporting vaccines until the end of the year. This will also freeze supplies to the COVAX facility, which is supposed to provide vaccines to poorer countries. Mendelson says India has no choice but to look after its own for now.
The Serum Institute of India produces mainly the AstraZeneca vaccine. In South Africa, we're using the Johnson & Johnson, as you know, and mainly the Pfizer. But for Africa in general, this is not good news because COVAX is an important supply line for Africa in terms of the vaccine numbers.
But he says Africa, and in particular hard-hit countries like South Africa, should concentrate not just on vaccine numbers, but on getting however many shots they have into people's arms.
That's a massive undertaking in South Africa, and we have got to accelerate very, very rapidly now if we're going to impact over the next 12 to 18 months in South Africa.
At the beginning of the year, the government said it would immunize 40 million out of a population of 60 million by the end of the year. Its latest pledge is to vaccinate 5 million people by the end of June.
5 million by the end of June is aspirational. I'll be absolutely delighted if that happens. I think it's very unlikely to do so. You need to try and get to 60 to 70% of the population with immunity, and that would be through vaccination and through natural immunity.
Mendelson, like many other experts in South Africa, is calling on the government to allow other sectors to procure vaccines.
We need to think about decentralizing the whole process. You know, there are numerous outlets that could be involved by just limiting it to government centres as is planned, I think is a mistake.
But the state insists for order and safety to be maintained, it must control every aspect of the rollout. It's a stance that makes many very nervous, given the government's poor record on effective management. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez flew to Spain's North African enclave of Ceuta yesterday in an effort to contain a migration crisis with neighboring Morocco after 6,000 migrants swam or walked over the border. Spain deployed troops and extra police to repel crowds who were trying to get around security fences from Morocco into the tiny Spanish territory. Videos appear to show Moroccan soldiers opening security gates a day earlier to let migrants through to the Spanish port city. Spain has since returned some of the migrants to Morocco. Sanchez described the sudden arrival of migrants as a serious crisis for Spain and Europe and urged those who crossed illegally to return to Morocco. Experts suggested this huge influx, which included entire families, was an attempt by Morocco to pressure Spain to alter its policy towards Western Sahara, the disputed territory to which Rabat lays claim. The UN Refugee Agency is reiterating its appeal to Tanzania to stop forcibly deporting asylum seekers fleeing violence in Mozambique's volatile Cabo Delgado province. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Reports say Tanzania has turned back more than 4,000 Mozambican asylum seekers since September. The UN Refugee Agency says this includes more than 1,500 people who have been forcibly returned in the last month. They currently are sheltering in dire conditions in the Negomano border point in Mozambique. The UNHCR participated in an interagency mission to this remote, hard-to-reach area in April. Agency spokesman Boris Cheshikov says the deportees told mission members they had hoped to find refuge in Tanzania after fleeing deadly attacks by armed groups in the town of Palma in March. However, they said they were forcibly returned by authorities after trekking for days in difficult terrain and crossing a river by boat to reach Tanzania. Cheshikov says many women and young children were among them. He adds a number of families became separated while fleeing their villages or upon arrival in Tanzania.
Many reported being detained, transported to a local school, and interrogated by Tanzanian officials. Those unable to provide evidence of Tanzanian nationality were returned to Mozambique through a different border point from the one used to enter the country, including individuals or families of mixed nationalities.
Cheshikov says the situation is particularly desperate for single mothers living in Negomano without family support. He says people are in dire need of food, water and sanitation and health care, but providing humanitarian aid is hampered by difficulties in accessing this remote area.
We have appealed to the government of Tanzania for cooperation to enable us to have access to the border areas, and we're standing ready to support the government to receive the refugees in line with their international obligations. What we're doing is we're reiterating our call for all parties to allow free movement of civilians fleeing violence and conflict and searching for safety and assistance.
About 724,000 people have been forcibly displaced since the start of the conflict in northern Mozambique's gas-rich Cabo Delgado province in October 2017. Aid agencies have been providing protection and basic relief to 50,000 people. The UNHCR says plans are underway to assist an additional 250,000 people by the end of the year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Germany is working with Italy to organize an international conference on Libya next month to discuss the challenges facing the country's new authority, especially organizing elections and expelling foreign mercenaries. The chairman of the National Elections Commission expects the voting to be held on schedule due to high international pressure. Wolfgang Pochtei, former Austrian military attaché to Libya, talked to VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi.
Yes, absolutely. There is a very strong international pressure from the United Nations, from the United States and the European countries. But one needs to be aware, many people in Libya benefit from the current situation. This includes the House of Representatives and the Higher Council of State, who could certainly not bet to get re-elected. This includes the militias in Tripoli and in Misrata, as well as the Libyan National Army of Khalifa Haftar in the east, who could lose their power, currently quite powerful influence after the elections. And this includes also current members of the government. Turkey can also live very well with the current government, as we can see by the numerous economic contracts signed recently in Istanbul and Ankara. So it looks like that in contrary to public statements, to all the public statements, many of those people just mentioned before are not really in a big hurry to establish all the preconditions for the December elections. Prime Minister Dabeiba himself, probably aware of this, focuses also more on the medium to long term and not just on the next months and on the elections. I would conclude that elections are not a very good option for Libya under the current circumstances, but I don't see a better one.
Germany is moving in coordination with Italy to organize an international conference on Libya next month, and this conference is scheduled to discuss the challenges facing the new authority in Libya, especially the organization of elections and the expulsion of foreign mercenaries from the country. What are the prospects of success for such a conference?
This conference is an important element within Europe's attempt to play again a more significant role in Libya. They are pretty much sidelined currently. This is also part of the international push for elections, which makes absolutely sense. The international community could certainly help to prepare the ground for the elections, to make them as best organized as possible, and, which is probably even more important, to support their credibility by monitoring their conduct. So if the conference has the ambition to achieve an agreement on the withdrawal of foreign forces and mercenaries, it will fail. Remembering Berlin Conference of January 2020, Germany should not have two ambitious objectives. Neither Turkey nor the Russian mercenaries will leave Libya in the midterm voluntarily or just because of the outcome of the Berlin Conference. Prime Minister Dabeiba and most of the GNU ministers don't want the Turks to depart. And this means that the Russians will stay too, to somehow balance them. I would say the conference should rather focus on consolidating the ceasefire itself by ensuring a credible international monitoring within the framework of the recent UN resolution. It will be already telling if Prime Minister Dabeiba himself participates at the conference in Berlin or just the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Al-Mangoush.
So what kind of scenarios could Libya witness if the election is not held on time?
Actually, if the elections are not held on time, but I believe it would be rather the best solution to have them on time, would be an extension of the current Dabeiba government. This would be not a catastrophe for Libya, but it would over time undermine the credibility of the government. And the longer this period after December, before elections take place, lasts, the more the credibility of the Dabeiba government will be undermined. And this could, in the worst case, lead to some more internal difficulties and actually even some more clashes between the various militias in Libya.
That was Wolfgang Pochtei, former Austrian military attaché to Libya, speaking to VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's a recap of our top stories. Germany is working with Italy to organize an international conference on Libya. And the UN is appealing to Tanzanians to stop forcibly deporting asylum seekers fleeing violence in Mozambique. Thanks for listening to VOA Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. Uganda, which hosts nearly 1.5 million refugees and asylum seekers, began coronavirus vaccinations this week in the camps and settlements. But as Halima Tumani reports from the town of Yombi in northern Uganda, vaccine hesitancy among refugees poses a challenge.
Ugandan authorities have received 964,000 doses of coronavirus vaccine and inoculated 453,000 people as of May 16. Now, the government is extending COVID-19 vaccinations to refugees, most of whom are from South Sudan. In Bidibidi settlement, the vaccination team is first targeting older people age 50 or higher. To get them to the clinic, the health team is going door to door. Moses Lomoro, a village health team member, says face-to-face interactions helped raise a lot of fears among the elderly.
After getting back, some people have reactions like someone can have a fever and vomiting. So all these rumors have scared some of the community members. And also, because other people do also have access to those social medias and give false information.
The name of the vaccine is AstraZeneca.
Before the vaccination, health workers carry out a counseling session in which each recipient reads and signs a consent form. The consent form reads in part, "As with any vaccine, there is no certainty that I will become immune or that I will not experience any adverse events from the vaccine. I voluntarily assume full responsibility for any events that may result due to vaccination." 65-year-old Mary Nyoka has concerns over the form. She says, "I have pressure, ulcers and malaria. We're already old enough. Are they giving us a vaccine to kill us?" She says, "So, I'm scared. They are making us sign a consent form." Dr. Charles Onek, a medical officer with the International Rescue Committee, says the community has had many fears that have affected the vaccination process.
People have been wondering, if I get a severe form of reaction and maybe I succumb to it or I die, will I be compensated? So that answer has never been very clear. People are taking that if you receive a COVID vaccine, especially for men, you become impotent. No, this has been a myth, and we have always been talking about it.
Dear communities, coronavirus still exists.
In the settlements, the different health centers use what they call Boda Boda Talk Talk to pass on messages about coronavirus, which causes the COVID-19 disease. Walizina Emi, a clinical officer at Swinger Health Center 3, says they are making progress through these messages.
It is kind of challenging because it has not been happening with other vaccines. It is somehow special. This is a new thing in the vaccination system. We're trying to talk to them and explain to them the reason as to why they should consent, more so because of these side effects.
Ugandan doctors say they will have to reset their messages to show and convince not just refugees, but even locals that any risks associated with the vaccine are minimal compared to getting COVID-19, which carries the risk of death. Halima Afmani for VA News, Yumbe, Northern Uganda.
Cameroon's regional councils this week called on the central government to grant promised autonomy and funds that they say would help resolve the country's separatist conflict. The regions have yet to receive a promised 20% of the state budget this year and the power to recruit state workers like hospital staff and teachers. Mokedwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Atem Ebako, vice president of the Southwest Regional Executive Council, says he has nothing to present as an achievement since he officially took office on January 21. Ebako says the central government in Yaoundé continues to strengthen its grip on power, contrary to Cameroon's decentralization code.
I have been given a job to do. I have not been given the resources to do that job. Yes, you come to my office, it's well equipped, but is that what my people want? For me to have an equipped office? No. Give me the money, give me the human resources, give me the materials, give me the competences, I'll start doing the job.
Ebako said without the resources, the regional executive councils are serving no purpose. Cameroon announced a special status for its troubled northwest and southwest regions after a grand national dialogue called by President Paul Biya in 2019. The talks involved the government, youth, clergy, representatives of some separatist groups and others to find solutions to the crisis in the regions where most people speak English. Participants decided that the two areas would have regional bodies responsible for economic, health, social, educational, sports and cultural development affairs. The bodies were meant to give the regions more autonomy and weaken support from armed groups that want the regions to separate from the rest of Cameroon and its French-speaking majority. The government said it would give about 20% of its $9 billion state budget to the regions to manage, but so far that hasn't happened. Cho Ngu Ernest is Director of Human Resources for Regional and Local Authorities in Cameroon's Ministry of Decentralization. He says many government ministers are reluctant to transfer resources to the regions as stated in the country's decentralization code and constitution.
It is not very easy to relinquish power, but the Prime Minister, head of government, acting on high instructions of the President of the Republic as the Minister of Decentralization, to make sure that all those decrees to enable the regions to function be sent to him with immediate effect, because the intention of the head of state is to bring development to the grassroots.
Cameroonian-born political analyst Jean-Pierre Manga lectures at the University of Bangui in the Central African Republic. He says Cameroon's unity is under threat unless the central government provides resources to the regional councils.
On appelle déjà ça une progression verticale du développement qui part de la base.
He says the central government in Yaoundé is noted for always depriving grassroots populations of resources. He says Cameroon's unity will continue to be threatened if the central government does not stop preventing civilians from freely participating in their own local development. Manga says it is high time power be truly relinquished as spelled out in the constitution. Cameroon's separatists have been fighting since 2017 to create an independent English-speaking state in the majority French-speaking country's western regions. The separatist conflict in Cameroon has killed more than 3,000 people and displaced over 550,000, according to the United Nations. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Ihayis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
this month, live from the Kigali Arena in Rwanda. The Basketball Africa League begins its inaugural season. Catch the action with VOA Africa. Monday's games tip off at 1200 UTC, 1900 UTC.